Blessings, everyone. This is Dr. Wendy Rhodes. Thank you for joining me here today for You Are Not Your Trauma with Dr. Wendy Rhodes. So today we have a special guest, and it is Marie McKenzie. So before we bring her on today, we're going to go ahead and we're going to show you a video pertaining to You Are Not Your Trauma and that you are an overcomer. Blessings to you all, and thank you for joining us today. Our special guest again is Marie McKenzie. I am about to pull this special lady in so she can tell us all about her, and I am so thankful to have her here today. Unmute.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I was going to say thank you for accepting the invitation here today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you for inviting me, and I'm happy to be here.
Yes. Well, Marie, I'm going to slide out of the way, and I'm going to let you tell these people, who is Marie McKenzie?
Good evening, everyone. I am Marie McKenzie, Jamaican by birth. I'm a registered nurse for over 24 years. I'm also a sexual assault nurse examiner, registered nurse, educator, best-selling and award-winning author. I coach victims of sexual violence to help them overcome the thought of being traumatized a second time, to position them as powerful self-advocates instead of becoming emotionally, mentally, spiritually, and physically shut in. You don't have to be shut in. There is help out there. So I'm Marie McKenzie, and I'm so happy to be here.
So Marie, tell me this. Everything that you're a rape kit expert, you're an advocate, an award-winning, best-selling author, a coach, sexual assault nurse examiner, and I'm pretty sure that there's much, much more that falls under that umbrella. But what I want to know is, you're a registered nurse. Was that something that was a desire, a burning desire for you?
Registered nursing was a burning desire ever since I was a child. My aunt Herma in Jamaica, my role model, I look up to her in every way. She was a registered nurse. And I'd spend many hours with her at the hospital, you know, watching her work. Sometimes I'd fall asleep anywhere in the corner because I'll spend hours with her. And so that's what's always been a desire. And I am so glad I got to do that.
You know, that's so funny that you would say that. I would have thought that my daughter would have wanted to be a nurse because I'm a nurse too. But she used to go to work with me all the time. She had all of the benefits. I mean, all the benefits, because, you know, when you bring kids to work with you, especially during nursing, they become spoiled and everybody come and get the kid and take them and, you know, and different things like that. But, you know, that's quite impressive that you actually looked at your aunt like a role model.
Yes.
Yeah. And so what I wanted to know is, right now, you're coaching. So tell us about your coaching.
You know, for many years, I took care of sexual assault victims in the hospital. And many times, if not all, my life experiences stare me straight in the face. Because when I, at the age of 11, was the first time I was sexually assaulted. This was in the home. So taking care of them, I saw my reflection where I was still a victim. It was many years. I was now an adult. I was caring for others, but I had not healed. So caring for them, teaching them how to take care of themselves, how to get past where they were. And I sounded like a fraud because I hadn't gotten past what happened to me, where I was. I just hadn't processed it because for many years I hadn't spoken about it. Nobody knew. I told one aunt who had since passed away before I even spoke out publicly about it. And we just kept it between us. So I had to heal. I had to work on myself. Although I didn't seek formal therapy or coaching, I went to scriptures, affirmations, reading books, associating myself with organizations and people who work to help victims heal. And through that, I was able to get over my trauma, be free from mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional trauma, and then turn around to want to help others in a bigger way than I had been.
Yeah. It's so hard to go through those types of traumas, and you're on one spectrum of helping other people and knowing that you're not healed. Like you said, you felt like a fraud. But then at the same time, you knew deep down inside that there was a part of you that really needed to be touched, that needed to be healed. And it's like all of this brokenness on the inside of you because of somebody else violating you.
Yes.
It's like so unfair, because one thing that we know is that the enemy comes to kill, steal, and to destroy. Most of the time that happens at an early age, especially when destiny is on your head.
Yes.
And that's something that I noticed, because I mean, you know, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. And but, so many children go through this sort of trauma. So many times they don't speak about it, or they speak, nobody believe, or they tell them to shut up and keep it in the family. So that child grows up with all this unresolved trauma, which manifests in maladaptive behaviors.
That's understandable, though, because it's like when there's no one listening, it's like you feel like you just so alone. Like you just, like you said, shut in.
Yes.
Shut in. And I love that. So the shut in came from your traumas, right?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. I love it. Let's talk about that.
Are you shut in? That's the question I ask my clients. Shut in means silently hurting due to unresolved trauma caused by rape or sexual assault, internalizing. You feel anxious, anger, taking on the guilt and shame that doesn't belong to you in the first place, reliving the trauma needlessly. Because if you only reach out, there is help.
Wow.
You don't have to be shut in. I was shut in. I know how it feels, how paralyzing that can be, how traumatic that can be. How you can sometimes don't have the energy to even get out of bed. I remember being off from work as a nurse. 3 days, I was just like bed, bathroom, kitchen, bed, bathroom, kitchen. You know, just like I have to eat. And when I say bathroom, I don't mean to take a shower. This was like, you're so depressed that you're just doing the minimum to get.
I tell you, I remember, I can recall when I had held in for so many years about my rape, of being raped at 14 by four guys. Now, I didn't talk about it really until like I was 49, like my mom and sisters or whatever didn't find out about it until I was 49 years old. That's 35 years later. The bad part of that is that when you go through that, it almost sets you up for like bad relationships and not feeling like you're worthy. You don't feel like you even, you know, just worth even having the best because you're so damaged from it, you know?
Yes.
So how did you get, you know, get through that? Like, really, how did you get through that?
It's God is amazing. I look back and I see how at every stage of my life, there were people that were placed there to help guide, support, encourage, and motivate. I remember in Jamaica, there was a family, the Briscoes. I met Faith Lynch, she's the older sister. I was the secretary at this company, Jamaica Public Service, and she applied for a job there. And we hired her, and she and I were like instant friends. So the whole family, mother, father, and four other sisters, they were like, over the years, it became my family. And when I tell you about people living God-centered life, they brought that into my life. The Nitas, Mr. and Mrs. Nita, they live next door to me in Jamaica. Their daughters, Donna Denise, and they have a son, Wayne. They were like my family to my parents. I got married twice, and Mr. Nita walked me up the aisle both times. That's how close we were. My first marriage, Mrs. Nita picked the neighbor's rose to make my bouquet. So that's, you know, he has placed people in my life. I remember when I was growing up, this community member, Miss Lou, she had a shop, and she would give me hats and different things to wear to church because my mother was single and, you know, she was in need. So the community, I call it the community, my village, and people were just there for us. And I look back and I wrote about them in my book. I just thank God that He placed people in my life. Even He knew what I needed when I didn't even know. So over the years, although I was healing from this and didn't, I wasn't even healing. It was hidden. I didn't talk about it. But those people were there to provide resources and information that I needed.
Listen, not only resources, but that love that you needed, yes. That extra care. You know, but that's how God loves us. He loves us like that. He gives us what we need, especially when we need it. And as they say, He may not come when you want Him, but He always right on time.
Right on time.
He is right on time. Tell me about being an award-winning, best-selling author. Tell us about that.
That in itself is a miracle. I hadn't thought of writing a book in January of 2021. I was browsing Facebook as usual when I, you know, before I go to bed, I'm just browsing. And a little pop-up about a 30-day writing challenge. And I looked at the name and it says Nalina Kai. And I was like, what kind of a name is that? But something just sparked in me. So I responded, it says DM me. And I did. And she invited me to a Zoom meeting where it's a group of us, and she explained what it was. I remember that night, the group was to determine if you want to write a memoir or a self-help. And it was like, I want to write. I became interested. Not before, I didn't think about it before that, but I don't know anything to write so much self-help. I'm a nurse. There got to be something, but that just didn't occur to me. Okay, I'll write a memoir. What I'm going to write about, I don't know yet, but I'm going to. And I remember that night she says, if the topic is painful, do not write it at night. So I decided I was going to write my memoir. I got off Zoom and I wrote the first chapter, which was the first time I was sexually assaulted. And there was time along the way when I'm like, oh my gosh, what did I take on? I can't finish. It's not flowing. I don't know, you know, how I'm going to get enough words to make up a book. And I remember when she DM'd me and says, what's your phone number? It's in writing, but that's how it sounded to me. What's your phone number? So I sent her my phone number, and then the phone rang, and it was her. How's the book going? And I gave her all the excuses why I wouldn't finish. And every excuse I gave, she came up with an answer. You can record while you're driving. You can do this. You can do that. And apparently that's what I needed, because I finished the book in 30 days. It went through editing and re-editing and promoted. Being with Nelena exposed me to her tribe, NK Tribe Called Success, which is a group of international and national best-selling authors, award-winning authors, who supported me and guided me through the process. On release day, everybody promote your book. There were like 20 of us in the group that started a 30-day writing challenge. Four of us finished, and we all released our books different dates in June of 2021, and we were all bestsellers.
Wow.
The power of your community, your tribe.
Yes. Man, that was amazing. But you know, I could understand like the pain of it all, of reliving that, the thing that you had pressed down so long that you just didn't want to have to face again, because you pressed it down. You said, forget it. It's in the trash. I'm not dealing with that anymore. Because, hey, if don't nobody know, I mean, I know I did it. I went through it. I'm done with it. But at the same time, it's a part of who you are.
Yes.
And who you're designed to even help.
Yes. It was cathartic writing it. I remember a few months before I wrote the book, I was on a podcast because someone read my bio and it's a sexual assault nurse examiner. And she invited me on because she'd been looking for a sexual assault nurse examiner to interview. I shared that podcast episode with friends and family. And of course, it was a big shock because all except one member of my family knew about it. So, you know, I got called about it and everything. So this was cathartic, just writing it out, getting it out on the paper and out there. I remember I said to my editor, everything that I'm writing, I could see, feel, taste, smell. It's when I started thinking about it, it's almost as if it happened yesterday. It was as raw as when it just happened. But I got it out.
I tell you, I bet that was, like you said, it was very therapeutic to be able to get it out. And the way I look at it, I think my thoughts of it was this: healing the little girl that was in the corner, pulling her out of that corner, telling her all over again, I love you. You didn't deserve that. That wasn't your fault.
Right.
Because even though that happens and no, it's not your fault, we still hold a lot of the blame.
Yes.
Within ourselves. And we don't release it. And we don't talk about it. We don't release it. We don't even cry for her. But it's the fact that when we finally do cry for her, she's relieved.
Yes.
She can be released because she's been held captive for so long in here and in here.
Yes.
And it's like, can somebody please save me here? Because it's just like we have a lot of baggage. You know, we go into relationships, baggage. We deal with a lot of things and we have baggage. But our rape, our assault and different things like that are a part of our baggage.
Yes.
And can you tell everybody what's the name of this book?
Things That Keep Me Up at Night. I remember after I wrote it and Nelena asked, if I'm keeping the title, because now that I've written about it, if it should be things that kept me up at night. But then after reflecting, I'm like, no, I need to keep the title, because just like an addict, it's a lifelong process. Because you're healed, you're not being traumatized, but there are triggers that, for you know how to deal with the triggers now, because you have the tools and resources, but they still come. They are still there. Things that keep me up at night.
I can think of quite a few things that keep me up at night. You know, I can think, you know, a lot of times we think about our bills could keep us up at night, our kids could keep us up at night. But the last thing we want is our traumas to keep us up at night.
Right.
But to be able to, like you said, it's still always there. It's always something as a reminder, but now you know how to deal with it.
Yes.
Now you know how to deal with it. Now, the main thing is saying that you don't own me.
Exactly. Exactly. You're not in charge anymore.
Exactly. Yes. Like, I am taking me back. I'm taking it back. I'm taking my strength. I'm taking my joy. I'm taking my peace. All of that, because it disturbed all of that, your joy.
Yes. And your voice. Your silence. Now silence no more.
That's it right there.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what? Had you ever gone through imposter syndrome because of this? Had you ever went through that?
Yes. Like you're not worthy.
Yeah. So, you know, you think about it. All of that, really.
Yes. And what I find from the book is that there are other people in similar situation, like I have been, who have read this book and have found their voice. If Marie can put it out there, so can I. Not everyone is ready to put it out there, but at least they have started the process of sharing, even just with me, but it's not in here anymore.
Shoot, it's the weight of it all. You know, it's like they say, it's the weight for me. It's the weight of it all. Just, you know, it's like you said, it keeps you up at night.
Yes.
But now you're in a position to help somebody else to overcome that, to be an overcomer of the sexual assault, not to be a second timer or even know how to have peace within yourself.
Yes.
Or even become strengthened behind what has happened. It's not easy.
Right.
You know, we know it's not easy. It's not something that I would sit up and lie to somebody about and say, oh, it's easy. But I will say that the writing is very therapeutic.
Yes.
Because even when I started writing, I realized I had forgot all about the 14-year-old me. I just shut her down. I act like it never even happened. But then I never realized that the traumas and the triggers just follow you.
Yes.
They follow you, and they're not, they follow you. And it kind of messes up your relationships.
Yes.
Whether it be, you know, whether it be a marital relationship, your relationship with your children, friendship relationship, or trust.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Another thing that is forgiveness. Forgiveness, forgiving yourself for blaming yourself, forgiving the perpetrator, especially if that person's in your family. And is still in your family, because you may have to face that person from time and time again. So without forgiveness, you may be re-traumatized over and over again. And when I talk about forgiveness, you're not forgiving the person for their sake. You have to do it for you. you have to do it for you. I had to go deep and do that for myself.
Yeah. I was going through the process with God, with writing this book, because I'm like you, I didn't want to. I knew I needed to, but I kept saying the same thing like you, well, what am I going to write about? But it was time to let the dead dogs die for real, you know, for the last time. And finally, it's time for it to just lay to rest. As I sat there and I'm saying, God, what am I going to write? And I said, well, I forgave my rapist. And I forgave my abuser, you know, and I went down through there like I did. I forgave them. And it was kind of like, God, you know, well, God is like, you're not finished. You're not finished. And I'm like, well, what is it? What's left? Like, literally, I'm sitting in a chair and I'm going, well, God, what's next? What's next? What does he say? You forgot about you.
Ooh.
Like you said.
Yes.
And I literally had to go down through there, through a list of what I'm forgiving myself for. Now, they may have had a short list, but my list was longer because of what? Condemnation.
Hmm.
Yep. All because of the condemnation. But what I will say is I really commend you for doing that. Like with being a sexual assault
nurse,
the nurse examiner, being the nurse examiner, a sexual assault nurse examiner, how do you feel like, I mean, what is your position like? How do you even approach these women? I mean, I don't even know the right question to ask, but what is that process even like?
Being trained as a nurse and separately as a sexual assault nurse examiner, and also a former shut-in, I know personally how they feel. First, I let them know I believe them, because that's one of the things that victims are faced with a lot of times, not being believed or being blamed. You shouldn't have gone there. You shouldn't have worn that skirt. You shouldn't have been drinking with them. So it's from a place of empathy and getting them to open up. Sometimes they're like, I've already swung to the police. I don't want to answer any more questions. And so the interview flows the way the victim wants it to flow. You follow, they set the pace. You're not going to push them to do anything they don't want to do. That's not the time. If they're not ready for the exam, you're just going to wait until they are ready. So, but just to be there if they need a hug. Sometimes you're sitting on the floor with them because that's where they feel like being at that time, sitting on the floor, crying, or just rocking. So you offer emotional support. So you're not just there to get the job done. Make a connection and proceed.
Wow. I couldn't see that as being an easy job. But what I can say is, when I think about you doing that job, and I think about what you went through, you were the perfect person for that position.
Yes. And when you say that, it reminds me of one night at work, I had a victim come in by ambulance, and she was assigned to another nurse. And the nurse was like, I'm not taking care of her. Because not that she didn't want to take care of the patient, but you may be called into court later on to testify. And a lot of healthcare workers are terrified of even going to court to speak. So she told the charge nurse, and the patient was assigned to me. And I bounced into the room ready to care for her. And she said, I don't want you for my nurse. And I okay then. So I walked out and I went and told the charge nurse, and she said, you are a nurse. I'm not changing the assignment. Yes. Now I had to return to the room. I was the only person in the emergency room who wanted to take care of her. I was the only person in the emergency room who was trained in that area. And I had to walk back in there with a smile on my face. And I informed her what the decision was. And I took care of her, and she was very happy in the end. She was very happy. I never asked her why, because it doesn't matter. Maybe I remind her off of the perpetrator or something. You know, I don't know what it was. And I really didn't care then. And I still do not care. I cared for her the way I know how. And she was happy.
Yeah, that's the thing about being a caring and compassionate nurse and knowing your why.
Yes.
That's the main thing, is knowing your why. When you stepped into that room, in that room with her, you knew your why. She didn't understand that you were really, truly equipped to handle her. But you knew your why. You stepped out as respect to her.
Yes.
But then you knew you had to go back. But you knew your why, and you knew you were equipped. And that's the main thing, especially knowing that you know who you are. You know what you are equipped to do. You know what you have inside of you and what you carry.
And I knew what she was going through.
Yes.
And if I were the charge nurse, I would have made the change, because for me, it felt like re-traumatizing her. And she didn't need that. So, but
just God, like, forcing her to do something she didn't want to do.
Yes.
Again.
But God works in mysterious ways, is wonders to perform. So I'm sure she was happy at the end, because she kept saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. And I pray that the memory of my caring for her, you know, returned to over the years, only that it will bring back to her why we met. So that may not be a good memory for her, but I'm glad I was able to make the experience less traumatic for her.
Yes. So I would like to know, is there anything else you'd like others to even know about you that stands out? So we know that you're this award-winning, best-selling author. We know that you were blessed by God, authorized and and authorized for your position. We know all of that. And we know that your book heals souls.
Yes.
We know that. Yes. We know that. And that you do have a program. And so if you want to talk to them about your program, then I'm going to bow out and let you talk about it.
Okay. And the Rape Kit expert, coach, sexual assault nurse examiner, and registered nurse. I provide confident, compassionate, confidential coaching through the Rape Kit process of each state in the USA. I've done the research, so I know what happens in your state, and I can help victims overcome the thought of being traumatized the second time to position them as powerful self-advocates instead of becoming emotionally, mentally, spiritually, and physically shut in. If you are shut in, you don't have to be. Reach out to me. I also have a new podcast on WJIL.today, WGRT on Roku and Fire TV Stick. It's called From Stuck to Limitless, where we bring you special guests or fire starters and change makers to give you tips and insights to get you from stuck to limitless, to change your life physically, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally. At MarieLMcKenzie.com. My link tree is on the screen. and I would love to connect with you. Thank you so much.
Oh, Marie. Okay. I mean, if you had any final thoughts or anything else, you can add them as well. This has been wonderful. I'm so thankful that you accepted the invitation once again. Do you have any final thoughts, or did you say everything that you needed?
I just want to know, if you're out there listening and you have been the victim of sexual assault, you are not your trauma. That's what I always say. And I know Dr. Wendy says that all the time. This is something that someone did to you, someone violated you. And we just have to be aware, keep our eyes open, make good judgment. You are not your trauma and you are not alone. We're here to help you. Reach out for help. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you again, Marie. Thank you for joining us today. This was amazing. Yes. So I thank you so much for gracing this platform today.
I appreciate you inviting me, and I love our discussion.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to end with this video once again.
Thank you
all. Blessings. Blessings to you all. Don't forget that you are not your trauma, and healing is your portion. Peace and blessings to everyone and their families.